The language I use is specifically mind bugs, and the mind bug is something like, I don't belong, or there's something wrong with me. Each mind bug creates a prison. So I don't belong creates a prison. This is the world that you live in. You don't belong. And so what are you going to do? You're going to try to get all the certificates, you know, all the accolades, all the degrees, all that stuff to prove that you do belong, but it's all coming from within the prison that you don't belong. And so you're never going to escape that prison. The journey of life is to use life, including your business, which is what I do, as a mirror to see, oh, where am I not free? Where am I still in a prison? What's the prison? Let's dissolve it. Welcome, everybody. Here is with me today is Mel Thacker, and we're going to see where this conversation goes. Welcome to the podcast, Mel.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelvin.
Yeah,
such an honor.
It's both ways. So, tell me about who are you, who do you serve, and what is the business challenge that I can help you with today?
Okay, I am a surgeon. And I am a coach for surgeons. So short story, I've been a surgeon for 13 years now. I am primarily ear, nose. I'm ear, nose, and throat. So I take care of people's sinuses. I'm a glorified plumber. I went through-
Glorified plumber.
Yes, for the face. I thought that that was something I was gonna do for the rest of my life. But then in around 2021, I started having panic attacks in the operating room. And so that led me on a coaching journey, and I overcame that, and I came out of that dark night of the soul, a better human, a better wife, better mother, better surgeon, better doctor, better friend, all of the things. And I fell in love with coaching. So then I got coaching certified and I started coaching surgeons, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm really good at this. And they need it just like I needed it. I kind of had a purpose crisis that culminated in panic attacks. A lot of surgeons are having a purpose crisis. And so now I am a coach for surgeons, and I do keynote speaking. My book is coming out in October. I have like all of this other thought leadership stuff that I'm doing. But as a solopreneur building my business, I had to learn marketing. I had to learn selling. I had to learn social media. All of that is very antithetical to the way that doctors think. We're risk averse. We expect an outcome at the end. It's like you go to medical school, you go to residency, you're going to get a job. It's guaranteed. But I'm realizing in the world of entrepreneurship, it's go fast and break things, which is completely opposite to the way that we want to do. We want to do everything perfectly. It's like the anti-perfectionist mindset. And so I've been embracing that and learning how to fail. But also, I think maybe my biggest problem is like the selling piece is selling in a clean fashion and communicating my products and what I offer to people in a way that compels them, that like moves people. I like almost don't want to talk about what I'm doing because it feels icky.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense
in a nutshell. It does.
Okay.
Yeah. I love it. Beautiful. I'm curious about what were the panic attacks about?
I always like wonder about that. I'm not 100% sure, but I have some theories. Probably multifaceted. One, the pandemic made everything feel unsafe. So it was like going to work. All of a sudden my nervous system was like, going to work is unsafe. I was going through a period of insomnia. I have a long history of anxiety. So it was like mental health stuff underlying all of that. I was starting to get into a transactional mindset in my private practice where it felt like I go to work, I take care of people's sinuses, and I get paid. And that transaction of like, I'm getting a payment for operating started to make me feel disgusted with myself. So it was like, I started to have this aversion to work. And instead of looking at that, I just kept dragging my ass to work and just forcing myself to just do what I was always doing because I didn't know anything different. And I also didn't know who I was underneath my surgeon identity. So it was like the threat of not having that identity was so terrifying. I think all of that, I don't know if maybe that answers your question, but it was all of that together.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. I appreciate that. So yeah, what was the transactional piece?
Yeah, it's like in private practice, they call it eat what you kill. Where you go in, you see patients and you get you get compensated. You know, a third party compensates you. But when you're in private practice and you're a partner in private practice, you see the revenue cycle. So I can see you. You can come see me for a sinus consult. I scope you. I know that if I scope you, I will bill 31231 and I will get paid. If you have a specific insurance company, I will get paid $500 for that. Like I know all of this, and it's that knowledge that creates a subconscious bias where it can color how you counsel patients,
Got it.
and it just feels awful. Like it's like
Right.
something I feel like I shouldn't know. Not to say that it's bad, because it's like it's two sides of a coin. One, it's not bad. Like I'm pro capitalism. I love it, but I love Simon Sinek's whole idea of the infinite game. Like you have to have a skew towards taking care of people first. It has to be, even if it's 51%, 49%, you have to have purpose in people over profit. And I felt
Makes
like I just
sense.
had too much knowledge of the profit, and there's a lot of pressure to like, you know, the finite mindset of like getting to your quarterly
Right.
goals, but it's like you're operating on people to get there. So it just feels so awful.
Right. So is what I'm hearing is like it's that it's not like getting paid for through the job. It's the incentive to get people into a treatment protocol that isn't necessarily the best for them.
Correct. It's like, yeah, it's you're putting the service to the patient as secondary instead of it being the primary thing. And that always has to be the primary thing. Kind of like in business, serving your client has to be primary.
Okay, makes sense. I get it
Yeah.
now. And so, and you also said about like a lot of surgeons have a are in a purpose crisis. I'm curious about
Yeah.
that too. What's going on?
Well, we get into this profession thinking we're going to be elated because we're saving lives all day, and like we overvalue the mastery and the technique, because it's like cool. I mean, your hands can do this really cool thing. And then you have prestige, and people look at you and you go to parties and you're like, oh, I'm a surgeon. And people are like, oh my gosh, what? Right? So it's like you think that you're going to walk around just in a state of joy or happiness. It's like the arrival fallacy. But then you get into it and you're just an adult with a job, but a really high stakes job that is fraught with moral injury, and you have no
Fraught with
autonomy.
moral injury.
Yes.
In what way? Is that what we just talked about with the trainer, or is
No,
that something
moral
else?
injury is more like it comes from a concept that comes from the Vietnam vets, as a psychiatrist who is treating them. It was kind of like in Vietnam, you had these soldiers who had to do these things against their moral compass, but they had to because of the direction of their generals. And similarly, in healthcare, we have to make decisions because a third party directs us, because we have to follow insurance rules, and it may not be the best thing for the patient. And that essentially is moral injury. And there's tiny little examples of that that are happening all the time. It's not always like, I want to give you a life-saving treatment and your insurance company won't pay for it. That's like the obvious moral injury, but it's little tiny things. Like in my world, it's I want to put you on a specific type of medication that is not FDA approved for this. It's off label, but I know it works and it's super safe, but your insurance won't cover it because it thinks it's not okay, and they want you to go on this other medicine. And so I'm just going to put you on this other nasal spray because I don't want to have to sit here and battle with the insurance companies.
Makes
And then it's
sense.
like the unpaid work, all of that.
So the
So.
moral injury is to you as the surgeon that you're having to bend your morals because of the context. Understood.
Yeah. You can't treat
That's
patients the way you want to. You're like, this patient needs this. I know this will get them better, but I have to follow the rules that the insurance company arbitrarily put in a cookbook and
Or the
says you have to follow that.
hospital or
Or the
whatever in the
hospital.
environment.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I get it. Yeah. So that's why surgeons are in a purpose crisis.
Yeah, it's kind of like they are living a dream of a past self, and they put like this job on a pedestal, and they thought their life was going to look a certain way, and it doesn't look that way at all or feel that way.
No, it makes perfect sense. That's Well, it's good. I'm always like, whenever people are in a crisis of meaning, I'm like, yes, that's
Yeah.
awesome, right? There's a breakthrough here. There's something that we need to there's a better version of you on the other side of that. So that's awesome.
Totally.
Okay. And it's beautiful. How does it feel to help a fellow surgeon navigate that crisis?
It's amazing. It's like it lights me up. It's the most wonderful thing, because you have someone who is actually taking care of, you know, potentially has somebody's life in their hands. Like I will have some clients who come to me who are frankly suffering and where they're at is unsustainable. And if you are doing a really, like if you're a neurosurgeon or, you know, there are certain subspecialties, a trauma surgeon, and you're literally like saving lives, you can have such a big impact. Like I can help them. And now because they are well-resourced and they can show up to the operating room as kind of the highest version of themselves, that can potentially like save tons of lives. So I feel like I'm having this indirect effect on helping patients by resourcing surgeons. And I realize I'm really good at it. And I love it. Some people don't like to sit around and like talk to people about like their inner world, but I love that. So it's
It's
like mutually
incredible.
beneficial.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's wonderful. It's amazing. Yeah, this is what I love, what I get to do as well. I get to support people like you doing your work, and so
Yeah.
it just ripples upon ripples. It's amazing. I
Yeah.
love it. I keep getting this like intuitive hit about one of my favorite books is a book called Extraordinary Knowing. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't.
It's I'd say a couple decades old. The author has passed now. It's this. I think she was a Stanford PhD in psychology, but one of the stories she tells is of this surgeon, this neurosurgeon. So I guess a plumber of the brain, if you
Yeah.
will. But he came to her because he had these migraines, and he was just like nonstop. And then they realized through working together that they started the moment he stopped teaching. Because he was at a university hospital, and so part of his job was teaching, but he stopped teaching. And the reason he stopped teaching was that he felt like he couldn't share his truth about how he did his work, because he had a perfect record. He'd never lost a patient. And his secret was that he would sit bedside next to his patient and wait until he saw this white light around their heads. And only then would he operate on them. And if he didn't see the light, he wouldn't operate. He wouldn't touch him. And he was like, if I share this with anybody in my profession, they will laugh me out of the fucking room. So I
Yeah,
better
it's too
shut up.
woo
Yeah, I better shut the fuck up and not tell anybody. And
Well, that's interesting because like I have a framework that is kind of similar to that, but it gives language to it. I call it the belief triad, the surgeon belief triad. And if you have it, if everything's intact, then you are going to be the safest you can be in the operating room. And that's belief in self, belief in the patient, and belief in the surgery. And it sounds like maybe he like sensed that in some way.
Exactly. And he saw it
Yeah.
visually as like
Yeah.
literal light around the patient's head. Yeah. So anyway, so the book is about how like she gathered all these PhDs and scientists that had these extraordinary paranormal experiences and brought them together to study these phenomena, share their experiences and figure out what the hell is going on. 'Cause like we all see these things are real, but we can't talk to our colleagues about them because it's too out there. And that, you know, so it's a phenomenal book. It's fascinating. So,
Yeah, well, then
yeah.
you have all these like, you know, near death experiences, and not everyone can be lying if it's all similar. Like
Exactly.
you see people that have died in the past, everyone has the white light, like all similar stories.
Yeah.
These people can't
100%.
all be flaky and making this up.
No.
Yeah.
No. But there's a very clear bias against talking about these things still, right? In
Yeah,
the
exactly.
halls of
Like
science. So
I love the woo. I mean, I think it's like interesting that you have a surgeon who follows evidence-based guidelines but is religious. Like you're essentially believing a story that you have no proof
Right, exactly.
for. So I don't know. I don't see the difference in the like the woo.
And everybody has experience of love. Like we all know what love is, and like we all live according to all these things that can't be measured. And yet we go, and then we change the clothes or the context, and then we think that everything has to be measured. It doesn't make any sense, but you know,
Yeah.
that's how we live. Sweet. So, tell me about the anxiety. You said like pandemic and feeling unsafe in that environment, but you also said you kind of really are. Always had anxiety and I forget if the insomnia was like a long-standing thing or is more a pandemic thing, but like tell me about the anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, I come from childhood trauma and like poverty, so I think that has always been like, oh no, I'm in survival mode. I think survival mode has always been my norm, and that's probably what contributes. It's nature, nurture, and then I have a lot of mental health issues in my family. Like my dad is bipolar slash schizophrenic. My mom has borderline personality disorder and ADHD, and I'm pretty sure I have ADHD as well. So it's probably some genetic as well. But I've always, I don't know, I think it has like served me well, and I've been able to manage it. However, in the pandemic, that was kind of when all of my work was taken away. That was really what kind of woke me up, because I'm in a private practice. I'm running a million miles per hour. I am seeing patients. I'm coming home. I'm taking care of my family. I'm never stopping. It's like you never sit quietly in a room and are with your thoughts. But when the pandemic hit, it was like all of the work was taken away. And so that was just me. And that's when I realized, oh God, like I'm addicted to work. I'm addicted to just going so fast so that I never have to stop and like process. So I think that was the way that I manage my anxiety. I'm a huge runner. I've run marathons. I think I just run. I just keep going so that I don't have to look at it.
No, my for yeah, a lot of endurance athletes, they're like for sure running from something, Yeah. We all do that. We all have our ways of doing that. I was gonna do a podcast. Maybe I'll still do a podcast that's just called Running from Purpose, just interviewing people about all the crazy shit that we do to run away from what we're really here to do.
And that's what I was doing. I was running away from purpose because I think behind the scenes I had changed and evolved, and what I thought I wanted, I no longer wanted. It was almost like an external validation bubble popped. Because it was, I'm like, I have everything. I have the house, I have the job, I have the kids, I have the husband, I have everything. I have everything I ever wanted, but yet nothing is different internally. It's not making you happy.
That's when we realize, oh wait, external circumstances can't give me what I want.
No, exactly. No, they can't. You can pay off your loans. You can have all of the things. It'll never be enough. I think that was the moment I was like, oh, I'm still a terrified little child. And then that showed up as insomnia, and then the worst end of anxiety, which is panic attacks. That was kind of like my body just saying, like, you can't keep running. You have to actually stop and do something about this.
How beautiful, and what courage and bravery of you to just even face that and acknowledge that and be with that. Most people never do that. That's incredible.
And I mean, panic attacks can really derail a career, and I thought they would, but I'm pretty amazed by how I can still do my job and talk about this. Like, I talk about panic attacks very openly, and my patients know this, and I think there's a misconception that you can't be honest, that you have to like live a secret life, but radical transparency can't coexist with like a surgical career. And that's what I think maybe the purpose crisis is, and like that's probably what I was going through, is the fact that the inside didn't match the outside. And that's what a lot of people I think come to me with. I help them make like bridge that gap. And I had such a huge dissonance between who I was internally and who I was presenting to be to the world. And that's what I think is maybe even a big source of the suffering that a lot of people in medicine and surgery have, because it's like the facade of prestige and the ego and the white coat, but then internally you're just miserable.
I mean, and a lot, 100%, and a lot of people in any profession, for
Any
sure.
industry.
But I get your point, like specifically because there's all the prestige and, surgeons, doctors, all that stuff. I get that. So you still have panic attacks.
Yeah, I do. Like, once you like lay down that neural pathway, you can't get rid of it. It's there.
I would be like ding 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 ding. I highly doubt that, but let's go. We'll get there. Let's walk me through, like, what does a panic attack look like these days for
Well,
you?
I don't know for everybody. I mean, for me,
For you, for you.
my hands start shaking, and then I start feeling like the lights are going to go out. And so now that I know exactly what it is, and I can manage it. If I'm triggered, which if I'm in a new environment, if it's really hot, those are all triggers for me. And if people don't understand, if everyone around me I feel like is judging me, then those will be triggers for me. So I just have to let my team know. So I'm like, if my hands shake for like a second, the moment I inject the septum, which is the first step of surgery, that's just me having a panic attack. It'll resolve in like 2 seconds and then I get going and I'm good. But
Got it.
before, I think I used to resist it, and that resistance of it would make it worse. But now I like move
Beautiful.
through it. I'm just like, oh, this is what it looks like, everybody. It's no big deal. It'll be over in 2 seconds.
Got it.
Don't be alarmed that like my hand shake for like 2 seconds.
Got it. So I'm hearing like it happens at work. I see you said
Only at
judgment
work.
only at work. Okay. Interesting. New environment, and you said hot, like temperature hot. And then And I heard you say like everybody's judging you. Yeah, that's the feeling, or that's the,
Yeah, that's the
yeah.
fear. Like that is kind of like the nervous system is like, you don't want to be under the microscope, right? You don't want anyone to be watching your
Well,
every move is like the
I don't know
fear.
about me, but let's
Exposure.
talk about you. Let's talk
Yes.
about you for a second.
Yeah, no, that's exactly like the my body's fear is like the fear of exposure.
Okay,
Nervous system.
exposed for what? What are you afraid they'll know about you? What's the worst
Like
that could
being
know
a
about you?
fraud, not being
Okay.
good at your job, being dangerous.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think that part thinks I'm like a child. It doesn't know that I'm 45, almost 46, that I've been doing this and I've done thousands of these and I'm good at it. It's almost like that part doesn't know.
So what? What's the moment when you're a kid and when you picture that feeling, that state that you're in when the panic attacks happen now, right? And your hands are shaking and it's hot and you're like, oh shit, people are judging me. I'm a fraud. I don't like, not good. I'm dangerous. If you just picture you as a kid, what's the moment that pops up where you felt the same feeling?
Being with my extended family, anything with an extended family.
What's just one moment? Walk me through what, where were you? How old are you?
Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I was like 8 years old at my grandparents' house. And I was not welcome there because my family was like the black sheep of the family. And so I was being exposed and like being seen and being visible felt unsafe because it was almost like being rejected from our tribe, essentially.
Yeah.
So being invisible felt safer.
Yeah. So, yeah. 8-year-old male. So you're, what's, are you walking in, are you, is it outside, inside? Is it
Inside,
at someone's
everyone's in a
home?
kitchen. They're all laughing and talking. And yeah.
And then your family walks in. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister, yeah.
Older, younger?
Younger.
Younger. How old is she? How much?
She's 4 years younger.
Okay, so she's your age, she's 4. How's she doing?
She's doing pretty good. I
Like in
mean,
the
she.
moment, as 4 years old,
Oh,
you
as a
walk into this.
four-year-old? Yeah,
Where was she? Is she
she's
affected by
actually.
this or?
No, she's accepted.
Yeah, okay. Huh. How did that make you feel, 8-year-old Mel?
Like an outsider. Yeah, it's the fear of ostracism. I'm like, I feel like an outsider. I feel like I don't belong. Nobody here loves me. There's something wrong with me.
I get it. So your little sister, what's her name?
Crystal.
Crystal. You and Crystal and your parents walk into your, what was it, grandparents' house? Everybody's in the kitchen laughing, having fun. Then you come in, like what does it go quiet? Like what's this, what's happening here that
I'm ignored.
by
Everyone.
and your
And
parents, they're welcomed, but you're not, or like how does it?
yeah. Well, yeah, I'm ignored. And then the only time I'm acknowledged is with like a snarky comment or something to criticize or insult me.
Yeah. Got it.
Which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's like when you walk in, I feel like that whole idea of everybody greeting you and hugging you, when that doesn't exist, I don't know why that's so painful for for a
Yeah.
child.
Well, for you.
Yeah,
It
for
was
me,
painful
for
for
child
you.
me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you didn't do anything wrong. Mel didn't do anything wrong. What, being the mother that you are today, if 8-year-old Mel was your daughter, what do you think she, what does she most need from you, from her mom?
She needs to know that she's perfect, just the way that she is, that she hasn't done anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with her. But the way that she's being treated is a reflection of the people around her, not a reflection of her.
And maybe like she's 8, right? Maybe she just needs to be held.
Yeah. Hugged.
Yeah, seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Played with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you up for just taking a moment doing that right now?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Close your eyes. Just like picture her in that moment coming in. And then what you can do is like just picture your family coming in, like take like freeze the frame at like that moment where she feels it hit her. Just freeze it. Now, today Mel walks in, everything's frozen, and but 8-year-old Mel and you are there. And you just hold her. Don't need to say a lot of words, but whatever comes to mind, whatever you want to tell her, just give her that right now. Make her really feel it in her nervous system, in her heart, in her belly.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah, I just wanted to be told, like, I'm so happy you're here.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy you're here.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
so
you.
happy she's here. Yeah. Are you happy she's there?
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
She's an awesome
Wow.
kid.
Fuck yeah, she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Is it true that she doesn't belong?
No.
Yeah.
Well, maybe with this tribe, but that's okay. She finds her own
Yeah.
tribe.
Yeah. And like, is it possible to not belong to the family you're born into?
That's a good question. I think so, yes.
What does it mean to not belong?
Perhaps, maybe not with that culture, to have different values, different beliefs, different worldviews, but
Sure.
that's not a bad thing. That's
No.
okay. Or
Yeah.
maybe it's just not fitting in, but you're still belonging.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
I
just
didn't
like,
fit in. That's okay.
you're different.
Yes,
Yeah.
very.
Right. You're different. And everybody's different to some extent, but maybe you stood out more. But I wouldn't even go as far as saying that made you not fit in. It's just like, yeah, you can't not belong. Like, you're born into the fucking world. You're born into this
Yes.
family. How the fuck could you not belong?
You're exactly right. It'd be
Doesn't
like saying
make it.
my kids don't belong, and like
Yeah.
whoever they are is who they are, and
Yeah.
it's beautiful.
And even if every person, like even if you and their father and everybody in your extended family hated those kids for whatever reason, doesn't mean they don't belong.
Yeah, that's
Do you
so
know what I'm saying?
true.
Who the
Yeah,
fuck gets to decide
who
that?
decides?
You're here, right?
That's so true. I don't know why that just like cracks something open in me. That's like, wow, you're good at this. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. You can't not fucking belong.
Maybe that's why it's been so painful, because it's a lie.
Exactly right. You just hit it right on the fucking head.
Wow, that's so fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And
That's
it's
why it's so
like,
tense.
what's that?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just like it's something that I've had with me this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's so beautiful. Yeah, it's like we can spend so much energy trying to outlive a lie or like outrun a lie, but like it's just a fucking lie.
Yeah, no, that's the lie that I've been running away from. I've been trying
Yeah.
to prove it. I was like, let me just go be really good at school. Let
Right.
me go prove everyone wrong. Let
Yeah.
me show them
Yeah.
because of a lie.
Yeah.
That's so
Yeah.
interesting. Yeah, and I didn't need to do any of that. I just needed to just be.
Yeah. Exactly. You're getting it so fast.
Yeah. No, it's like I don't know, it's just such a mind fuck where I'm like, ever since I've been a little kid, I was like, let me figure out what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Everything around me is telling me there's something wrong with me, but that was a lie the whole time.
It was.
Yeah.
There's never anything wrong with you. How could there be?
Yeah.
Like, how could there be anything wrong with you?
There can't.
You can't be any
Yeah.
different than you are.
Right, exactly.
The fuck?
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's like the word perfect, I think, is so interesting because I like the meaning of like whole and complete. And we are born perfect because we're born
Yeah.
whole and complete, whoever we are, whatever the fuck we are, whatever gifts we have, and whatever weaknesses we have, we just have.
Yeah. Yeah. And we humans are very good at making these judgments that
Yes.
things should be something other than what they are, right? We get addicted to that.
Yes.
All the shoulds, it should be this, it should be that. But like, it is what it is, you know?
Oh my
You can
God. And that's
fight
so
it.
interesting that I'm like doing that reverse on my extended family because I'm like, they should have made me feel more welcome.
Yeah.
But they just shouldn't. There's no reason for them to be different either.
No. You're getting it really fast.
Well, it's just like, it's interesting how it's two sides of the coin. I didn't realize how judgmental I was being, like counter-judgmental for being judged.
Yeah. And you're so innocent in doing that because like it's just your survival.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now you know better. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I don't have so much like animosity towards my family anymore. That's so interesting.
Yeah. They're just doing their best.
Yes.
They're just doing their fucking programming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite teachers is Byron Katie, and she has this phrase. She says, whenever she walks into a room, she knows that everybody there already loves her. They just
Yes.
might not have realized it yet.
That's
Everybody's
incredible.
just, everybody's pure love. It's just sometimes we have like all this mind stuff that obscures it. We forget it for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no wonder people do horrible things. It's just because they forget. Like
Yeah.
nobody would ever do anything bad from that place of like love as opposed to doing a place of hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Self-destruction or otherwise. Now like I was self-destructing until my nervous system was like, you can't keep going on like this.
Yeah. So is it true that you're not safe?
No.
Tell me about that.
I mean, I don't think that part really fully believes that yet, but maybe I want to.
Yeah.
Like there's a part of me that still doesn't feel safe.
Yeah, in what way do you not feel safe?
In that exposure, judgment.
So what is the worst thing that they can say about you?
That I'm wrong, that I'm stupid.
Have you ever been wrong? Have you ever been stupid?
Totally.
Yeah. So you can just agree with them?
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
That I made a mistake.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
could agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. You've been stupid at times for sure. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So you just agree.
Yeah.
You know what? You're so right. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yes. Well, now I'm trying to figure out like why I need to feel safe too.
Safe from what?
It's almost being canceled is like the fear of or losing an identity.
Okay. Canceled from what or in what way?
Like having an identity ripped away
What identity?
of being a surgeon. Like let's say I'm trying to think of how this comes up at work, because this is where it all manifests, but it's just me as an 8-year-old at Thanksgiving. And the fear is being exposed, being judged, being seen, but then what? That would mean I could be canceled. And if that's the case, then that could look like being, losing your privileges or going through a lawsuit, something along those lines would be the tangible way it would show up. And then that would mean that I would lose my surgeon identity. And now I can't do my work. And if I don't know who I am underneath that, but now that I'm diversifying my identity, it's okay. It's okay if I lose that, but still, it's like the failure of it. It's like fear of failing. Then I would have failed.
And then what did you
And then I'm a
fail?
failure.
And then what?
And then I would figure out what to do next.
Right, but what's the fear? What's the fear of being a failure?
It's the emotional state of feeling like a failure.
And so what? So that's a feeling you can be with feelings. You know how to be with
Yeah,
feelings.
it would just really suck.
For how long? For like 90 seconds.
Yeah.
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 Is it the belonging again? Like if you're a failure, you don't belong, or you're going to be rejected, or
Yeah, I think it comes back to that, because then if you're a failure, now you're rejected. You've
yeah.
lost a community.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing, I hear a lot of like of identity being tied up to specific things. It's like I am a surgeon, or then it becomes like I am a failure. I don't know who I am without this. Like, so what I'd invite you to consider just like that we don't need anything to put after I am. Just I am. Yes, I operate. I function as a surgeon. I have an education as a surgeon. It doesn't mean that I am a surgeon. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, who are you? At a soul level, you just are. All the other stuff is just surface.
Yeah. No, it is this never-ending seeking to put something after I am, for sure.
Yeah.
Trying to define who I am.
Yeah. From the mental, right?
Yes. Not yeah, exactly. Cognitively. But
And
if
the
I'm,
way,
yeah.
and the reason you do that is to avoid feeling, to avoid experiencing.
Yes. But if I follow just how I'm feeling, then that becomes like a moot point, essentially. Because if I'm just following my own fascination, then I can just follow that wherever it takes me. Like it took me
Yeah.
into surgery, and then it took me into coaching, and that's okay.
Yeah. And none of it is who you are, is what you do. Yeah, I see. Yeah. It's like really resting in just the being that you are and getting more and more comfortable there. With your 8-year-old self and all the other whatever year old versions of Meg are there. And just being present with that. And then we can go do stuff. And then we get in our heads about things, and that's fine, but none of it is who you are.
Right. Yeah, it's I just feel like maybe I've overvalued that. And now I'm recognizing what that leads to.
Yeah. Well, because you felt like you weren't enough as you were, right? You weren't good enough. There's something wrong with you, and you didn't belong the way you were. So, like, of course you're gonna compensate for that by, becoming somebody, right? Like, oh shit, I'm a nobody. If I become somebody, then they'll respect me. They'll all like me. They'll all like, I'll feel safe. Feel like I belong. I feel like I'm not a fraud. I'm not a bad person.
Yeah. But I'm just a multifaceted human being like everybody else. Like I'm not special.
No, you are, and you're not, right? You're absolutely unique and special, and you're also just like, there's so much joy and pleasure in just being a nobody, just being
Yes.
doesn't none of shit, like, not
Well,
trying to
it's
be.
interesting because like when that kind of started to hit me, la not last year, but the year before, all of a sudden I had a like an inexplicable desire to take all of my degrees off the wall. And now they live in a box in my basement. But for the longest time, they're in my office, just like lining my wall because I realized, oh, those are up there for me to prove to the world who I am. And now I don't identify with that. Like that just doesn't align, doesn't feel like an integrity to have to like not that to say that people who put their degrees on their wall, there's something wrong with them. Like it's great if you want to celebrate that. Like, look at all these wonderful things that I did. I want to celebrate this. I want to show the world. But I didn't like my reasons anymore. And so I took them all off and put them in the basement. And that felt like freedom. It felt really good to just like now you are going into a closet.
It's beautiful. And maybe at some point you're like, put them back, but from a different energy, where it's like, this is not about me proving who I am, but about making it easier for someone to trust me to do the real work that I'm here to do, or whatever the game becomes at that point.
Yeah. It almost feels like my ego was born when I was 8 out of just like protection. And now I've learned to kind of start to it's like a dissolution of ego that has felt so it's like all these opportunities to dissolve my ego have been so beautiful. But I guess that's being the nobody.
Yeah, it's like the ego not having to, puff
Yes.
itself up to be somebody, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So the way that I think of it, so ego is great. We can't function in the world without ego. So it's not like we want ego to go away. The language I use is specifically mind bugs, and the mind bug is something like, I don't belong, or there's something wrong with me. Like, these are the core underlying mind bugs that everybody has a version of these. For some, this is stronger. For some, this is stronger. But these are the mind bugs. And the way that I think of it, I can't prove this, but this is my view on life, is that we come into this life already having decided, I want to experience what it looks like to live with this mind bug. But each mind bug creates a prison. So I don't belong creates a prison that you live in, that this is the world that you live in, you don't belong. And so what are you going to do? You're going to try to get all the certificates, but all the accolades, all the degrees, all that stuff, to prove that you do belong, but it's all coming from within the prison that you don't belong. And so you're never going to escape that prison. Like, everything that you do is just reinforcing the fucking prison, right? Because that's the where you're coming from. I'm doing this because I feel like I don't belong. So now I do this, and like, it doesn't actually fix it. So it just reinforces that I still don't belong. It's not that this happens because my mom was this way, or my dad was this way, or my grandparents was this way. No, my soul orchestrated these events so that it would have this experience. And now the journey of life is to use life, including your business, which is what I do, as a mirror to see, oh, where am I not free? Where am I still in a prison? What's the prison? Let's dissolve it. And so when you see it like you did here today, it's never going to come back the same way. Never. This is done. You might still get caught up in it in moments, and it might take you, 30 seconds or 30 minutes or 30 days or whatever, but it won't be the same, and you will be able to wake up out of the trance again and be like, oh shit, it's just like that old, I don't belong again. Because you had this moment today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's incredibly cool. Yeah. Breaking people out of prison, you know?
Well, it can like be with people. People could sleepwalk with that their whole lives and die with
100%.
it.
Most people do.
Yeah.
Most people do.
Which is wild.
Which is why I work do the work that I do, which is why I'm on this fucking mission. Like, let's,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking of all of like my colleagues who I see. You can almost like start to notice, and again, like not judging them, but you can start to see like some. I mean, you look at Byron Katie, like she's fully enlightened. She's an enlightened human being, like Eckhart Tolle as well. Like these are two enlightened humans walking around on the earth, but like I think a lot of us are just sleepwalking. Not everybody is that level of enlightenment.
Yeah, and I think Byron would be the first, Katie would be the first to disagree with you.
Oh,
She's
that's so
not fucking
interesting.
enlightenment. She's not enlightened. Like enlightenment again, it's the identity piece, back to being a surgeon and all that stuff. It's not an identity. It's not a permanent state. It's a moment to moment thing.
But that's how I perceive,
Yeah,
or
because
part of me does.
exactly, because that part of you that needs the identity piece is also going to place identity on other people. You're going to project it to other people. Yeah. Again, so innocent. Just not necessarily true or helpful.
Yeah, and not useful. Fascinating. Yeah. No, it's like so interesting how we like build our lives around a lie and around, this one story, trying to disprove it.
Only thereby proving it more.
Yes, and then just building more evidence to prove it. Yeah. Fascinating.
And
What
so
was
the
your story, I wonder?
what I love about the frame is that it doesn't put blame on anybody else, right? We take 100% responsibility for this, and then it becomes this the gift. Like, I really think, like, at a soul level, when we're just in the quantum soup as a soul, as a pure consciousness awareness, there's no difference. There's no duality. It's all oneness. And so there's no fun there, right? If everything's one, like, where's the joy? Where's the fun? Like, don't go to a movie because it's all sunshine and rainbows, right? You go there because there's obstacles, there's challenges, there's stuff. So we create these challenges and obstacles for ourselves here to have that experience. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing bad. There's nothing, like, it's just that's how we chose it. It's very powerful. Now we get to choose something different if we want to. And so I just wanted to touch on when I said, like, this, like you said, like, once the neural pathways are there for panic attacks, they're always there. I want to challenge that. You can hold on to that belief, of course, but that's not gonna, you know, it might be true, it might not be true, but if you believe it to be true, it will be true, right? Versus I can choose different. So the way I think about the neural pathways is the more you use it, the stronger it gets, but also the less you use it, the weaker it gets, right? Neurons that fire together wire together, and neurons that stop wiring together stop firing together, stop wiring together. So what's beautiful about thinking about it this way is it's not worse. We're not taking "I don't belong" and replacing it with "I do belong," right? Because that becomes the affirmation on top of it, and, like, it's still talking against the energy. Instead, I'm just dissolving it, exposing it as a lie that it is. And so next time it comes up, you're like, "Oh, that's a lie." And then what you get instead is, instead of trying to go from this neural pathway to this neural pathway, you're going from this neural pathway to just all of it,
Yeah,
right?
because it's
To
like
wholeness.
the two opposite pathways are just two sides of the same coin. It's
Exactly.
almost like putting the coin down.
Yes. Right on.
Which
And
feels
so
so much better.
the more you practice that, the more it just stops happening, and it can happen super fast. And so next time a panic attack happens, if it does, it might never happen again, I don't know. But if it does, remember 8-year-old Mel and just be with her for just a split second. And remember this whole story about, like, belonging, not belonging, whatever, it's complete bullshit. Remember, if it's like, "I'm a fraud, I'm stupid, what I've been wrong, whatever," I can find that also, which we didn't talk about. The flip side of that is it an absolute truth that you're a fraud? Is it an absolute truth that you're stupid? Is it?
No.
No. Categorically
Categorically, no.
stupid. No, it's not a categorical truth that you're stupid or that you're a fraud. No. So yes, we can find it, and no, it's not a categorical truth. And so just smile. Yeah.
And that's so interesting because it's like paradoxically, if you, I feel like if I do that work in the moment, I will invite a better outcome for everyone. Which is the whole point anyway.
And you could even say in that moment, you can even be like, hey, I'm just feeling 8-year-old Mel come up. I'm just gonna be with her for a moment. We'll be right there. Like, I'm not saying you do that, but like, what a cool thing to model for everybody.
Oh, I totally will do that. I mean, I think I said something similar. I said, oh, my human animal is just feeling unsafe right now. I just need to create some safety for her. I think that's the way I phrased it, but I
That's
could
so
equally
sweet.
say my 8-year-old. Yeah. I can be the weirdo surgeon, but that's okay.
Hell fucking yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So now let's talk about selling being icky.
Yeah. That's another story.
And can you see how this, how that connects to what everything we spoke about? Tell me about that.
So I don't feel like I need to convince myself that it's not icky. I just have to put that down. And just, I mean, I have this belief. I don't know where that was my original belief, but then I veered away from it and then I came back to it. But giving with reckless abandon, and I that seems to be my strategy. And I think that might be what I want to do, but that's what I feel compelled to do if I'm putting that down. I'm just giving with reckless abandon. Not that I'm a toxic martyr, but I know that whatever I need to sustain my business will come back to me on the back end, as long as I'm making service and giving, showing up to give, not to receive. That's what I feel like
And
I want to do.
yeah, I love that. I love that for you. I love that in general. My phrase, I love the giving with reckless abandon, actually. I really love that phrase. My phrase that I've been using is show up and serve. Just show up and fucking
Yeah,
serve.
totally. That's exactly it. Yeah, show up and serve. Very simple.
And there is still a way where it might not work out financially, which is if you have blocks on it.
Yes.
All right. So we just want to clear those but my feeling is that if you're like, there's still might still like, so my thinking with how it connects is that if there's a part of you that feels like you're a fraud, that you're wrong, maybe you're even dangerous was a word that you used, right? Then that you're not good, like that might hinder a sale. Can you see that?
Totally.
Right.
Because I don't believe in my product. There's
And
something blocking my belief.
if you're dangerous, like actually like hiring you, buying from you might ha cause harm. And if you have integrity, which I can very much hear that you do, then yeah, you would be out of integrity if you actually sold stuff from that belief, right?
Correct. So I think I want to sabotage my business because I part of me believes I could be dangerous, is afraid I could be dangerous.
Are you dangerous?
No.
Do you have some dangerous ideas? Have you, I mean, do you?
Maybe.
I mean, could be dangerous to certain people or certain structures or institutions. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I am dangerous to systems. I think I'm a disruptor, but I think I like that.
Right. So again, we can be everything. You know, are you a murderer?
Sometimes, not usually, but sometimes, yeah.
I murdered a bunch of ants lately. Like I have. I don't know if I should feel bad about that, but I'm a fucking murderer. You know? Like we can be everything. We can be with all of it.
Yeah,
It's
it's
okay
like
to be
your and
dangerous.
life.
We can be it's okay to be dangerous. It's okay to be stupid. It's okay to be a fraud in some cases.
Oh my God, that feels so good.
Yeah, I'm fucking dangerous. I'm dangerous to your ego that wants to hold on to an identity of like being a certain surgeon in the old way. But how's that working for you? Maybe we need a little
Not
danger
good.
there. Yeah, right. So it's like you can just put words to all these things and be it. And just own it. All the things you're scared of people knowing about, you just own them and share how you're dangerous, how you're a fraud, how you're stupid.
Oh
Yeah, I'm
my
fucking
God.
stupid. I stuck it out in that industry for so long without being honest about who I was. Yeah, that's stupid. I'm stupid.
That was pretty stupid. And I was a fraud. I was showing up pre pretending.
There we go. Yeah.
I was an 8-year-old showing up in a 41-year-old's body trying to operate, and I was operating on people.
Yeah. So now when you open your reel with like, I'm a surgeon and I've just realized I'm a fucking fraud. Or I was a fraud for 10 years.
So true. Yeah. Wow.
Talk about how 8-year-old Mel shows up in your when you're on the job. Like that kind of shit is compelling.
Yes. I've been hiding her.
Yeah.
Why have I been keeping that a secret story? That's so interesting.
Why would you? Why did you have to?
Shame.
Because you thought that hiding was the best strategy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And you kept that going. And again, no fault of yours. But now it's time for her to be fucking fully visible to you and to the extent that you want, and it feels good to your audience if you want it. But make sure that she feels good and safe about it. Taken care of, cared for, loved,
Yeah.
held. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like I was going to war with my 8-year-old
Yeah.
while I'm trying to build a business and
Yeah.
like be a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't work so well.
No, and this is what we all do. Right? We disown a part of ourselves. We decide like this is not good. Who I am, this part of me is not wanted. So then we internalize that judgment.
Yeah,
We
totally.
internalize the war until we stop.
Yeah, it's like not exiling a part and actually going the opposite direction, saying like, here I am. Here's like something I thought was ugly.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So, what do you know to be true now that you didn't when we started, and how is this going to change your business?
I know that I was trying to solve a selling problem with an old story that was like deeply rooted in ego and an exiled part. And that would have never worked. And I think I have to solve it with a different brain. And it's not about like, maybe it's not even about solving it. It's just about doing my work and giving and just serving and like showing up to serve.
Yeah. I like to say it's not solving it, it's dissolving it.
Yes, that's right.
It's
Yeah.
realizing there's nothing to solve
There's nothing
because
to
it's all
solve.
just a lie.
I've been trying to solve, so maybe I need to dissolve.
Yeah. And how's this going to impact your business going forward?
I think I'm going to energetically invite a lot of people into my world.
Is it going to feel lighter?
Yeah. And
Simpler.
easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simpler.
Yeah. That's amazing. You're so beautiful. You're so incredible. I love the work that you do in the world.
Thank you. Yeah,
Yeah.
thank you for this. This was awesome.
It's very, you're doing really important, very, very good work. Very, very valuable work.
Yeah.
And
No, I
you're
truly believe
so
that I
fast.
am.
Yeah. And you're so fast at getting things that I can totally tell that you've already done a lot of work, and so you're getting it really quick.
Yeah, no, I have, but I haven't done it from this angle, and I've been carrying this around. So this feels like really freeing.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you so much
No, thank
for
you.
being here today. Amazing.